Good morning and welcome to Life Moments, a podcast designed to inform, to inspire, and to motivate. I'm Terry Beckstrom, your host, and it is July 2nd, 2021. Okay, podcasts are back. However, they will be limited initially. But what an awesome program we have for you today. I expect after listening to this special lady that you're about to hear from, that you'll be left with one word, just like me. Wow. If you don't already know June Reichard, then let me be the first to tell you that you should. June is a walking, living, breathing miracle of God, and she radiates with an angelic presence. If you've read my latest book, Fearless, then you may remember the What About June story. If you haven't, please order the book and order multiple copies to give them away. I'm hearing some stories every day that the book is speaking to people, and I can assure you that it doesn't have anything to do with the author. It does, however, have a great deal to do with the content of the book, the message of the book, and the stories and people highlighted in the book. And you're about to hear from one of them, perhaps the most prominent and compelling human featured in the book, my dear friend June Reichard. Now, this is from a 2006 cassette tape. And you won't be able to tell that June spoke before a large audience that day, because you could hear a pin drop the entire time she spoke. So grab a box of Kleenex and gather everyone in the house, car, wherever you may be. Tell your friends about this one, because this, my friends, is a message that you won't want to miss. Take me back to 2006 and let's listen to June Reichard.
I just want to thank you so much for coming. There are many of you out here who don't know me. You've seen the name June Reichard for years and prayed for me in Sunday school, and now I want to thank you for that. The only reason I'm up here tonight is because the Lord has blessed me, and the prayers of a lot of you have saved my life. And I really do not have time to go back and tell you my testimony. I really want to emphasize what happened to me in the last 9 or 10 months, but I have to just briefly bring you to that point. And I used to be a runner, and I loved to run. I raced on the weekends, so I'd run 5 or 6 miles, and I would run at 5:30 in the morning. And after a while, we were singing a lot of choruses, and I started singing these praises, and I would turn a corner and run up this road, and there would be a beautiful star, and I would think of the psalm that we sing in praising God and adoring Him, and we call Him the bright star, the bright morning star. And so I began a heart and attitude of praise to Him, and as I was running along, I would praise Him and sing choruses, and I would thank Him, and that's when my prayer life really started. I got home, and I was just so excited because I had spent that time with the Lord. I started keeping a prayer journal. And I would put my prayer request on the right side, and then when the Lord answered them, they'd go on the left side. And over the years, I have looked back on those sometimes when things seemed impossible, and I have seen that God has done the impossible in my life, and that gives me great courage. Well, I went to the doctor one day, and he told me I had to have surgery, and thank the Lord, he was a Christian doctor. Some of you know him, Steve Adams in Florence. So I had the surgery, and a couple of days later, George and I were preparing to come home when he came in the room with a very serious look on his face, and he said, "I'm sorry to tell you this, but you've got ovarian cancer, and I'm going to have to operate again tomorrow to see how far it spread." And he said, "This is very serious. Ovarian cancer is called the silent killer, because it doesn't really have symptoms, and by the time you find you have it, it's too late." And at that time, George asked him, "Does this mean June's going to die?" And praise the Lord for a Christian doctor. He looked right at George and he said, "George, if calling June home is what it takes to glorify God, then that's what we want." And at that moment, the peace that passes all understanding just overcame me, and that was my heart. Lord, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to really glorify your name through this. And after I recovered from surgery, I started the chemotherapy, which a good friend of mine, Tony Watcher, and I have had, we had so many conversations together about heaven and about different things, and he went home to be with the Lord last year. And I would share some things with him, and he would share some things with me, and we would talk about how horrible, try to see which one had suffered the most, because he really suffered. And then we would say, well, you know, the only way to treat cancer is the slash, poison, burn. And one day Tony said, what is that? I said, first they cut you, then they poison you with the chemotherapy, and then they burn you with the radiation. And so he really liked that because it's about the truth. Well, to skip on ahead, I got through that period in my life, and on the Sunday after I'd had my surgery, there was an aide that had been in there with me for several days, and she came in Monday and she said, I'm just so worried about you. You were so sick yesterday. I went home and called my pastor, and I said, Pastor, we got to pray for this woman. She is really sick. So they wrote your name on a piece of paper and put it on the altar, and they prayed for you. And I said, well, I certainly did feel it, and I could feel the prayers of the Harmony people and everything. So life went on, and a couple of years later, I went to the doctor, and he says, the ovarian cancer is back, and this time it's very, very serious. He said, I don't even know how to help you. I'm going to have to send you to someone else. And he said, before he told me this, he said, I'm going to do the biopsy, but we won't know until Monday what it is. And he says, we won't be sure until then. So George and I just prayed all weekend, and I kept telling George, I have such a peace. I know it's not cancer. And I told my son Robert that. They were so worried, and I didn't even give it a thought. I knew it wasn't cancer. Well, he called Monday night and said, it's really serious this time. It is that rare form of ovarian cancer. He said, I've been calling doctors, and I couldn't get the one I want, but I want you to go to the Blumenthal Cancer Center in Charlotte. And so he got the doctor, and one thing after another happened, and it ended up the cancer was too large for the doctor to operate, so they started an aggressive form of chemotherapy, and they did the chemotherapy, and it didn't stop it. It started growing. So then I went to Charlotte and had the surgery. Some of the darkest hours of my life, and my precious husband was beside me all night. Anytime I was in the hospital, he would stay right beside me. And a doctor asked me once, do you know you wouldn't be alive if it weren't for your husband? And I said, yeah, I know that. And a doctor once introduced me. It's his miracle. This is my walking miracle patient. And I thought later I should have said, no, I'm not your walking miracle. I'm God's walking miracle. But anyway, this was the worst time, some of the worst times I can remember in my life, because I was burned terribly with the radiation. And I had radiation every day for 6 weeks. And then in the middle of that, since everything they had tried had failed, they didn't think I was going to make it anyway, so they decided to do something radical. And they put me in a radioactive room and put a radioactive implant inside my stomach. And I stayed there for 3 days, and I could not have any contact with George. He could not come in the room. The only way anybody came in the room was if a nurse put on the hazmat suit and came in to change the IV fluids and all of this. And I was just so used to having George with me. But God taught me that no matter what, he is always with me. He will never leave me or forsake me. No matter where I go or what I do, he's always there for me. And so for 3 days, I prayed to die. I just begged God. I said, God, this is it. I can't take anymore. I want to go home so bad. Please take me home with you. He didn't do it. So when we got home, I just was really, really sick, and took me a long time to get over it. And one of the things that helped me so much, the first surgery I had, George would sit by the bed and read the Bible to me because I was too sick to read it. And he would ask me sometimes, where do you want me to read from today? And then he'd give me a big grin, and he said, I know Psalms. The Psalms are filled with so many beautiful words. Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. And some of them is, especially Psalm 34. I sought the Lord, and he answered me, and he delivered me from all my fears. And that's what he did, and it was like I would just go from psalm to psalm, and it was words that the Lord had already given to my heart, and it was like he was just speaking individually to me, and one of them was, I will take refuge in the shadow of your wings until the disaster passed. And I thought about several times in the Bible it talks about an eagle and how powerful, and God has referred to the eagle, and I thought about how he was protecting me like a mother eagle would protect her baby. In particular, sometimes the last little baby eagle is reluctant to leave the nest. They're scared. And so when the time comes and he doesn't go, the mother goes up beside him and makes this loud cry, and he's perched on the nest and he falls. And at first he's falling, and his wings are flapping, and she's all around him, hovering, under him, beside him, over him, just saying words to him. It's going to be all right now. And then all of a sudden, he looks down, and he sees that he's going to dash himself onto the forest and be smashed to pieces. And so he begins to be scared. All of a sudden, just before he gets there, the mother eagle comes up underneath him, and he lands on the middle of her back on her wings. And then she swoops off for a while, and then she lets him go, and this time he makes it. So I always have that image of God doing that for me, and just always delivering me from anything. And like I said, I've got to really skip a lot of stuff because I don't have enough time to tell you. But a couple of years later, I was really, really sick and just felt awful, and went to a doctor, and he told me there was nothing wrong with me. It was all in my mind, that because I was living like I had a death sentence over me, that I was so scared I was going to have ovarian cancer again and die. And I said, that is not true. Anyway, we left there, and I was just stunned. And things just got worse. I got one of these spray things that you spray. I couldn't breathe. I could not breathe. And I would use the spray. We went to this doctor, and he gave me different medicine and all this. When all of a sudden, one day, I was over at Diane's. We were sitting in her backyard, and I said, Diane, I am so sick. I said, I don't know what's wrong with me, but I just can't go another day, and I'm scared to tell George because he'll be worried so. And there, you know, I know there's nothing wrong. And she said, Jen, I'll take you to Dr. Pavi in Florence. So we went over there, and Dr. Pavi told me there was something wrong. And I came home and had to tell George, and it was colon cancer. And so I had more surgery, more chemotherapy. And then after that, I think my body had just about all that it could take, because I just went through a period of where I was completely broken physically. And all this time, George took care of me. No matter what hospital I've ever been in, the nurses have said, I have never seen such a devoted, loving husband as yours. And one chemotherapy nurse told me, if someone had told me about George, I would have said, you're lying. There's nobody who could treat his wife like that and take care of her. And she said, but I've seen you every day as you come in with her. And actually, sometimes when they come to stick me, they couldn't get my vein. It was rolling. And he'd throw them out in the hall and say, go get another nurse. But anyway, she had seen the good part of him, and had watched him as he took care of me. And so he just has had a wonderful person, wonderful testimony for the Lord about how he takes care of you. My health was bad. It went on, and then a couple of years ago, I started to have these horrible attacks of pain. And what had happened is the radioactive implant had burned me so badly inside that it had caused the scar tissue to form, and it was moving over all of my organs, squeezing them. And when I would get in this kind of pain, I couldn't stand it. And George would take me to the emergency room, and they would give me a shot of morphine. And sometimes I'd spend the night in the emergency room and get another shot of morphine. And this went on for a while. And then last year, I went to the doctor, and I had this place on the side of my nose. And usually George has to just drag me to the doctor because I won't go. But this kind of concerned me. I didn't know what it was, but it just kept getting larger and redder. And George had taking me to the dentist, and we were riding down Broad Street, and I said, George, you have to call, because he takes care of everything. He even puts my medicine out once a week. He's got these 7 little vials. He counts all the medicine because I take so much, and he puts that out, and he takes care of all the mess with the insurance. I don't have to do anything. He just takes care of me. You know, Christ told husbands to love their wives as Christ loved the church. And I have a friend that recently saw someone who used to live in Sumter, and he said, how's June doing? And then he said, how about George? Is George still the way he was? And this person said, yes, he's just as devoted and loving. He said, well, you know, it used to make me ashamed as a husband. When I looked at George and saw what he did for you, for her, it just made me really look at myself and think, you know, I'm just really felt bad about it. And so I went in to see Dr. Latham. Actually, we were driving down Broad Street, and I said, after I told him to make the appointment, I said, you know, there's Dr. Latham's office right there. Let's just stop and go in. And I mean, you just do not know. I do not do this. I try to hide things and avoid it. And he's always asking me, tell you're in pain. I know you. No, I'm fine. As a matter of fact, the worst sin I commit is a lie, and I'm deceitful. And, well, I have a lot of sins, but those are the worst ones because I lie to George almost every day. But anyway, we went in there, and I told the girl that I needed to see him. And she said, well, this was at the end of May. He doesn't have anything until the end of June. And I just, George says these things, but I mean, I was amazed. I said to her, look at this thing on my nose. And she looked at it. And then another girl came who knew us. Actually, she had been a nurse when I had radiation. And she said, it's all right. And they took me back, and Dr. Latham looked at it, and he didn't like the way it looked. And he said, I want you to come back in here Tuesday and let me see this. So when I went back Tuesday, it looked so bad that he said, I'm going to, you know, with your history, I'm going to do a biopsy on this. And I thought, oh, man, that is ridiculous. So he said, come back in Friday. So I went back in Friday and had the biopsy, went home, didn't give it another thought. He had told me that if you don't hear anything from me by Thursday or Friday, you can call the office. And that just went in one ear and out the other. So Tuesday morning, the phone rang. And Dr. Latham said, it's cancer. And it's a very... it's squamous cell. It's not the basal cell, but it's worse. It's squamous cell, and you've got to have something done right away. And I said, okay, and he was taking care of the arrangements, and there was the doctor in Charleston who does nothing but a procedure called the Mohs procedure, and it takes the cancer like this off your nose, and you're just left with a little tiny hole. And so that's what I was going to do. I was going to see him. Dr. Latham tried his best to get me right in, but it was June 27th before he could see me. And so after he told me about the biopsy, I thought, oh my goodness, how am I going to tell George that I have cancer for the fourth time? And I didn't tell him all day. At night I didn't tell him. The next day I didn't tell him. I said, Lord, and I just was kind of waiting for the right moment, but there's never any right moment. So we were pulling up at the doctor's office out of town, one of my doctors, and I thought, well, if I tell him now, he won't get crazy, and we're going in here to see the doctor. So I told him, and of course it broke his heart, but everything just worked out so good the way the Lord worked things. So we were going to go down there on June 27th and see this doctor, and all of a sudden, this thing just doubled in size, and I went back to see Dr. Latham. He said, we can't wait. He said, I really don't know what to do. It's just so hard to get in to see him because he's just famous all over the southeast for what he does. And he said, you might just have to go down there and camp out. And he said, if this gets any worse, you come back to me. Well, I went home and it got worse, and I didn't go back. I just stayed and thought, well, if I could just make it to June 27th. Sandy called me in the middle of a week, and she said, How is it? I said, it's not good. It's really beginning to hurt, and it's spreading all inside my nostril, and it hurts really bad. She said, well, you know, people cancel appointments all the time. Why don't you call down there and see if you can get an appointment sooner? And I said, no, I can't. You know, the doctor is the one who gets you in. And I said, I've sat in waiting rooms and heard receptionist say, no, he can't see you for 2 months or 3 months. I said, there's no use in me calling. She said, yeah, I think you should call. Well, I thought about it and I'll pray about it. And I prayed, Lord, I'm going to call down there. And I want you to have a compassionate, caring person who will give me an appointment soon. I answer the phone. So I called down there, and the woman's name was Madeline, and I just briefly told her, and she said, give me your number and I'll call you back. Well, 5 minutes later, the phone rang, and she said, Dr. Cook will see you Monday, the 20th. She said, now understand he's not operating on you till the 27th, but he'll see you on the 20th at 9 o'clock. So George and I were there in his office. We were sitting there in Charleston at 9 o'clock, and he walked in. He didn't pick up a light or an instrument or anything. He just leaned back against the counter and looked at me and said, you have one of the fastest growing cancers there is. And if it's wrapped around the stem, it can go into your brain. He said, we have got to operate sooner. So I thought, sooner than next Monday? And I said, how soon? He said, 5 minutes. I went back there, got the anesthesia. He operated on me. We sent it to the pathologist, came back, there was more. So he operated more. So as we were waiting, it came back and he was talking to us. And he said, this was June the 20th and my appointment was June 27th. He said to me, if you had waited one more week, the cancer would be in your brain. And just absolutely, I don't know why I'm amazed at the Lord. He's always so wonderful and awesome and just does more than we can even think or ask. But I was so amazed at that. And then he gave me a mirror. And I don't know that I've ever been completely horrified in my life, but when I looked in that mirror, I could not believe it. And I found out later why he did it. But I thought, why in the world would he give me a mirror? The left part of my nose was gone. A whole big half of my cheek was gone and dug out. All I could see was muscle and bone. It was just awful. And then he introduced me to Dr. Ross, who was going to do some facial reconstruction. That was his specialty. And he operated on me 3 days later. And that night, when I was in the hospital, I noticed something. And it was about 2:30, and the nurse had come in my room and asked all nurses and all people everywhere, asked me, how in the world do you deal with this? I've seen your chart. How do you go through this? And it's always a wonderful opportunity. The Lord just brings them. I never know when it's going to be or who it's going to be, but I get to tell them about Jesus. I even had a nursing student come in my room one time and said, for my class, I have to do a paper on somebody, and I want to do it on you. Can I interview you? And then I'll go back and tell my class about it. Well, she interviewed me, and she wrote down everything I told her about being saved, everything about Harmony Church and how the people prayed for me, everything about how the Lord had delivered me over and over, and how he took care of me and just provided every need. And so it's just amazing. But anyway, I got up and went into the bathroom, and I washed my hands, and I don't know about you, but I kind of, when I wash my hands, will glance up and look in the mirror. And so I glanced up, and there wasn't a mirror. Then I went outside and looked around, and there wasn't a mirror. And I thought, why in the world doesn't this room have a mirror? Well, the next day I found out. The doctor had gone in and split from my hairline all the way down below my eyebrow open, taken part of that out to form a nose, taken cartilage out of my ear to form the nostril. Then he had cut all the way under my eye, and it was just amazing. And he had pulled all of the skin over to cover that great big gaping hole. And my eyes were black. I looked like, I can't describe to you how I looked. And George, believe it or not, has shown some people the pictures. When somebody comes up to me and says, oh, I know what you're going through, George will say, no, you don't even pull out those pictures. And they are so awful. They're terrible. But anyway, went home, and I was supposed to have my next surgery. I had to have a number of surgeries on my face, and I had it scheduled when all of a sudden I had one of my pain attacks. And I went to the hospital and got the morphine shot and went home. And this time it wouldn't go away. It got worse and worse. And thankfully, I cannot remember the next 3 weeks, except just for a few things. George took me to the hospital, and they admitted me. And I stayed there for almost a week. And they were waiting on a bed at the medical university. And they were sending me down there because I had a blockage, and it was very serious, and I had to see the gastric surgeon down there that was such an expert on operating. So finally, I got down there, and believe it or not, the doctors, I've always heard you can't get a doctor on the weekend. Well, at 5 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, not only did the doctor operate on my stomach, but the other doctor, they had coordinated things and decided where I wouldn't have to go on the anesthesia twice. One would operate on my face and one would operate on my stomach. So I had like a double surgery. Well, we spent the next couple of weeks there in the hospital, and it was kind of, I didn't get out of the bed the whole time I was there. I couldn't eat. I had a tube down my throat going into my stomach, and I couldn't eat. And there was one thing, every now, they would give me some chipped ice, and every now and then they would let me have a popsicle. And I came to love popsicles. My mouth was so dry, and I would put that popsicle in there at night, and it'd be like parched, and that it would just melt, and I thought that was just the greatest thing in the world. And when I got out of the hospital, I couldn't eat. I couldn't make myself eat. I told George, go get me some popsicles. Well, he brought back a double bag of like 36. Well, 2 days later, I told him, I need some more popsicles. He said, you mean you've had? I said, yeah, I've had it. And I said, it's just something. It'll go away in a few weeks. And right now, I've probably got 100 popsicles in my refrigerator. And I think I had 10 this afternoon trying to get up some energy. But this was a very, very hard time for me. And everybody who came in was like horrified to see my face. They'd never seen anything like it. I mean, the nurses, everybody, they didn't try to hide it. So when we went home, I was just so weak from the 3 weeks and couldn't make myself eat. And I'd open the refrigerator, open the freezer and look. Then I'd walk into my pantry and look on the shelves and think, what am I going to do? And then George would call me and said, guess where I'm going? And I said, where? He said, I'm going to Susan Cox. She's got some bread for you. And I've told Susan that that bread was my manna from heaven, because when I could not make myself eat anything, I could eat that bread. And just like the Lord gave the manna to the Israelites when they were so hungry, He has given that to me. It just always works out. His timing is perfect. Whenever I need it, that's when she calls. And she's just been, she's a wonderful Christian who loves the Lord, and she prays for me. And she's just been a real encouragement. She and her husband, Jay, both have been a real encouragement to me. And I wanted to just talk a little bit about suffering and tell you some of the reasons you think, well, what did she do that she's got to suffer like that? But it's not that you do anything. It's that you cannot really know the Lord until you've suffered. And I don't mean that. I mean, you have a new understanding of how He suffered when He died on the cross to save us from our sins. And so that is one part of the suffering. And then He also causes us to realize this is a brief life. We're not going to be here very long. And we get our eyes fixed on heaven. And Tony and I used to talk a lot about heaven. And I would say, well, Tony, I don't, you know, the Bible tells you a little bit, but I just know it's going to be wonderful. It's going to be perfect. There's not going to be any tears, no more sorrow. There's not going to be any cancer in heaven. And I said, I always think about that verse about eye has not seen, ear has not heard, mind has not conceived what God has in store for those who love Him. And that's what, I mean, we can't even in our human mind imagine what God has in store for us. And so I went back and forth, I think probably since January the 1st, I've been in the hospital 4 times. We spent New Year's Eve down at Medical University, and somebody asked Chuck George at the hospital, he said, where'd you go for New Year's Eve? He said, we went to Charleston. He said, well, where'd you stay? He said, in the hospital. So something happened to me. I never could get my strength back. And all the time, I was thinking, because I've spoken at Harmony before and shared my heart with you, and I thought, I have just got to be able to speak at Harmony and tell them how the Lord worked it out a week later, and I would have been dead. I would have had cancer in my brain, and I just wanted to share that with everybody, and I was just too sick and too weak. And on December 7th, I had my 7th surgery, and when I came back, I don't remember the next couple of days. It was on a Wednesday, and it was like I was just unconscious. I remember Saturday night, I was brushing my teeth, and all of a sudden felt something in my throat and pulled it out, and it was about this long with blood all over it. And they had left it in me during the surgery. And this was not, let me say, this was another hospital. This was not the medical university. And they have a checklist. When they put a sponge in you, they check that off. When they take it out, they check it. And apparently, whoever was supposed to do that hadn't done it. So I was just horribly sick, and I kept telling George, I can't explain it. It's not like chemotherapy. It's just my whole body. It's like I have a raging fire in my whole body. Well, we went to the doctor the next day, and he had put a stent about 3 inches up inside to keep it from collapsing, and I told him, I said, I just feel horrible. And I told him about what happened, and of course, he was horrified. He just could not believe that somebody had done that. And he started me on an antibiotic and told me that he thought that stent was infected, so he was going to go ahead and take it out. So I said, okay, we rode home. I felt it just got worse and worse. Tuesday, I got up. George kept telling me to go to Dr. Jordan, my doctor here in town. And I said, no, I don't want to go to the doctor. And so Tuesday afternoon, I told George, I got to go to Dr. Jordan in the morning. Well, when I went in there, he told me that it was hard to tell with me. You know, it could just be a number of things. It even could be the antibiotic the doctor had had me on, or I could have picked up an infection in surgery. So he saved my life by changing the antibiotic. And he gave me 4,000 milligrams of this antibiotic a day. And I started on that. I went home. I've tried to describe this to Sandy and Diane and Mama and other people, and I can't describe it, but all of a sudden I knew that I was dying. All that I've been through, I've never thought, oh boy, I'm dying. Like I said, there have been times I wanted to and I'm afraid to, but I just knew that I was dying. And the more the afternoon went on, the more I realized that that was what was happening. And I got up, went and got some a form, and Diane called and said, what are you up to? And I said, do you really want to know? She said, yeah. I said, I'm sitting here writing down the instructions for my funeral. And she said, June. And I said, Diane, I'm not kidding. I'm dying. And there's nothing I can do about it. I've been to the doctor, you know. So anyway, I didn't tell George. That particular night was the Christmas party for the Toomey staff. And we love to go to Susan and Jay's every year with the other people. And I wanted him to go. And if he knew how bad I was, I knew he wouldn't go. So, and by this time, I was like gasping for air. I couldn't breathe. And it wasn't down in my chest. It was like just right here to my brain. I could not get any air, and I could not breathe. And so if he said anything, I was kind of like, yeah, no, where he wouldn't see. So the next day I got up, and I mean, I knew. And I sat there in a chair. I was too sick to lie down. And I sat in the chair, and I have two precious babies, my little beagle Reese and my sweet lab Dixie. And Reese is just as wild as she can be. She's over that house. She gets on that bed and looks out the window and barks at cats. And if you're in the hall, you have to step aside, because when she comes, she's flying. She got up in that chair with me that morning, and she did not move. And I know y'all are going to say I'm crazy, but a study recently showed that 88% of the time a dog could detect cancer in a person. And Reese knew that I was dying. And she sat there in that chair beside me, and I put my hand on her all day, and she didn't move. Then all of a sudden that afternoon, I said, Lord, I just don't have a peace about this. You know how many times I wanted to go home, but I don't have a peace about this. I even said, you know how much I've wanted to get back to Harmony and share what you did for me. And all of a sudden, it was like I realized that it wasn't God, it was the devil. And I realized when Tony went home to be with the Lord, I had the opportunity to witness to a lot of people And my thoughts were on getting to Harmony and talking to you about this. And I knew the devil didn't like that. And so I realized it was from the devil. So I prayed and I said, Lord, I just plead the blood of Jesus on me and ask you to take whatever this raging infection is out of my body. Please take it out and bind Satan. And thank you that you're more powerful than he is. And he cannot do anything without you allowing it. And you have control over him. So I sat there for a while and George came in and all of a sudden I started coughing. I was like coughing and gagging and I jumped up out of the chair. I spit up another one of those things that was this long that they had left in me. I was dying. I had toxic shock. The doctor said I wouldn't have lived another 24 hours. When I spit that thing out, I mean, it was so gross, but I had that bacteria growing in my body, spreading. That's why my whole body, I couldn't explain it or describe it, but that thing was poisoning me. And I know the doctor said that he just didn't know how I'd lived. About that time, your organs shut down and all this stuff. So anyway, I've had a real hard time dealing with that because I couldn't breathe. And the moment I spit that out, the thing was gone from my body, but I still had trouble breathing and just had some medical problems. And this year I'm going to stop right here because I just love to talk about the Lord. He's been so good to me. And this year has been really hard on George because we've been back and forth in the hospital, back and forth. And one of the reasons that God allows a person to suffer is to demonstrate his power in you and to show others. If he could do that for June, then he could do that for me and the problem that I have, because I know some of you have worse problems than I do. And the most important thing that I want to say tonight is, for a long time I thought I was saved because I went to church, I had been baptized, I'd even gone down forwards when my sister did. And I thought that's how you got into heaven. And then one night an evangelist told me that it's only because Jesus Christ died on the cross. And if I accepted that and prayed and confessed my sins to him and thanked him for dying for me and taking my place and then rising after the third day and invited him to come into my life and save me. And I did that night. And I'll tell you what, I don't know how people face things without the Lord, because if you have a religion and not a relationship, then you're not going to heaven. If that's what you're counting on to get you into heaven, believe me, there are a lot of people who have a lot of religion. George was always such a good witness, and for years I wouldn't witness. I thought some people can and some can't, and I wouldn't. He came home one time and told me that he was witnessing to this man, and he asked him if he was saved or something like that. And the man drew himself up and looked at George and said, I'll have you know, my grandparents donated the land that church goes on. And that's so sad, because people think that works will work, and they don't. So I'm just going to stop with one thing. That's this song, I just couldn't get away from it. It's always meant so much to me. And this week, I've got tapes that I'll mash and listen to, and the Lord has really been good to me. He gave me something that I never thought I would have. I call it my ministry. And because I'm home all the time, I'm too sick to go out and do things. Over the past few years, cancer patients and even someone who has something else wrong with them will call me and say, I've heard about you, and would you please tell me what it's like to have chemotherapy? Tell me what it's like. Oh, back and forth. And I always start with Joshua 1:9 and give them that verse, and it says, do not be discouraged, do not be terrified, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. And I said, that means no matter where you go, what you have to go through, you can always count on the Lord. That time in that room when I didn't have George, I couldn't count on him. There was a window over there that he could look in to see me, and you can imagine how brokenhearted he was to see me in that room. But George couldn't help me. He couldn't do anything for me. But the Lord was there, and he did. And this is the song that I've just heard it all week, and I've always loved it. It is well with my soul. And the thing about this song is, some of you know about this because I've heard people talk about it before, but this song was written by a man. He grew up loving the Lord, and he was a man of God. He was even a good friend of evangelists back at that time, some of the great evangelists that we had. And he was very wealthy. He was an attorney. He had real estate. He was very wealthy. He had a son and four daughters. One day his son died. And then all of a sudden, the great fire of Chicago back in 1871 wiped out everything in his real estate. And they were so brokenhearted from the personal loss, the family, plus the finances. At that time, of course, the only way you traveled abroad was by a ship. So he decided that there was going to be a revival in England, and he and his family would go to Europe and get their mind off things. And then when it was time to go, something came up and he couldn't go. He was going to follow them a week later. Well, his wife and daughters were on a ship that was struck by another ship, and it sank in 12 minutes. All four daughters drowned. His wife made it to Wales, and she cabled him, and she said, "None saved but one." And when he saw that, he got on a ship and headed for her, and the captain of the ship knew what had happened. And so he came to him and said, "We're about to approach that place where your daughter's drowned. Do you want to see it?" And he said, "Yes, I do." And so he went out and looked at it. And at that time, all he could think about is, "It is well. It is well with my soul." And so he wrote that hymn. And this is kind of like, I don't know what's going to happen to me. I've got to have more surgery, and you'll be wondering and asking Sandy and Diane. And I'm such a private person. I don't like people visiting me. So I just want you to remember that when you think of me, that it is well. It is well with my soul. When the sea billows roll, no matter what my future holds, the Lord has said that it is well with my soul.
Wow. Is there anything that I could add to that? I don't think so. But I will remind you that that recording took place 15 years ago, and there's more to the story. June has had a total of 9 different cancers. She's got an incredible story, and it continues today. I just spoke to her this week, and what a blessing it was to do just that. What an inspiration. What a message of God's power to overcome adversities. God's not finished with June. Help me get this story out to others. Don't you think there are a lot of people out there that need this? Thanks for joining us today on the podcast. Hope you have a great weekend, great 4th. We'll look forward to talking to you soon.